civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good evening, Tribe World. It's Ray here with another lockdown interview in this these challenging times. And I'm joined now by a very, very special young man who is best known and loved by all of you for bringing the character of Dal to life. And so join me in welcoming Ashwar Sundarasana. Forgive me for pronouncing your name, Ash. I always get it wrong. How are you? Good evening.
I'm very well. I think, you know, we are doing well, you know, despite the situation that the world is in. But, you know, it's very nice to be able to chat.
No, it's lovely to hear your voice and nice to connect. And we were having a chat, Ash, just before we recorded. And you've been travelling around, but you're now back in Wellington in New Zealand.
That's right. Yeah. So I've been back for about a couple of years. Before that, we were sort of, you know, all over the place, and it's nice to come back here. It's a very it's a lovely country, and it's a very nice society to be part of. And so back in Wellington and enjoying it, and living sort of the tradition, you know, family life with a couple of kids and my wife. And it's great.
No, it's lovely. Congrats. You've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And that keeps you busy, no doubt. And congratulations on being a dad. And your wife is does very well as a doctor, isn't she? And you're busy, but you're able to share parenting. You're enjoying. So you're spending a bit of time with the kids. Ash, do you enjoy fatherhood?
Oh, I really enjoy it. And I think, you know, it's been particularly during the lockdown. It's made me realize how much fun it is. You know, it's a bit tiring at times, but actually seeing, you know, two kids grow up and seeing them sort of become their own individual persons is fascinating. So I've, you know, it's been great.
Well, that's terrific. And what did you do in the lockdown, Ash? New Zealand has now eased restrictions, so you're able to get out and about a bit easier. But there was a, you know, how long do we have? About 6 years, six weeks. 6 weeks of quite intense. So you were stuck indoors, I guess. And were you able to work from home, or did you have to go out to work? Or
I was fortunate. I was able to work from home, and I think the lockdown in New Zealand, we were still able to get out and exercise. So, you know, I found I was still able to run and enjoy the outdoors, and because of, you know, when the lockdown occurred, the weather was actually still quite nice. So, it meant that, you know, a lot of my spare time was pottering along and doing some gardening that's sort of been in the back burner, and actually just enjoying kind of the simple things in life, cooking a lot more and trying new recipes. And so it was a mixture of work, but also just enjoying home and family time.
That's great. Is your wife's a Kiwi?
Yes, she is.
Oh, that's lovely. And your mum and dad and family, all, everybody well?
Yes, everyone is well. I think, you know, for the fans, that, you know, one of the things that I remember about my parents was that, you know, there was a photo of Dal with his parents, and yeah. That was actually both my parents in that photo shoot. And you know, apart from, you know, just aging, you know, since then, that they're well and there in Wellington, and you know, I think they're also just enjoying being closer to the grandkids and being grandparents and things like that, as you probably know.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very special, Ash. It's is that their first two grandchildren, or do they have any others?
No, it's the first two. Yeah.
That it's I've got two grandsons, and I love to hang out with them. And it is. It's very, very amazing. And we're talking, Ash, how fast time has gone, really. And I look at my daughter, and I mean, it's terrible, you know, because you'll know with your kids, but once they become teenagers, then adults, and you're always, I mean, my daughter is a mother, you know, she's got two, you know, 20-year-old sons, 24-year-old sons, and I'm saying to her, drive carefully. You know, and she'll say, oh, duh, dangerously, you know, and I say, mind how you cross the street now, you know, And Ash, it's the worst thing, you know. We were talking about this in one of the podcasts. You know, love is an interesting thing, really, and it's a four-letter word. And the pain of it, it's quite amazing. It's a simple thing, love. And this is an old hippie here. I grew, come of age in the hippie days where the tribe, a lot of the fans will know. That's where the original concept came about building a better world. And as we did in the 60s, you know, marching and trying to change, I think in the previous generation screwed up, etc. But love was love. Once you become when you fall in love with your wife, and that's one love. But when you have children, they own you, don't they? They grab your heart, and your life is never the same again. You know, because the definition of love is that someone's happiness is secondary to your own, and their well-being. You will not be happy, Ash, unless your two lovely children are happy. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, and it is fascinating. I think, you know, you own, you realize. You know, I think, well, I digress, but, you know, pre-kids, I think what I, you know, it was very difficult for me to kind of figure out, you know, kind of go, oh, how could that even be a phenomenon? How could you care about someone more than, you know, your own aspirations and goals? And you know, it's incredible how that changes and the power that, you know, has in relationships and in society and you know, in what we do. And yeah, it is fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And for me, you know, I always say, you know, I've got a very close family and was raised in a very close family. And family to me is all that matters. It's all important. It's very tribal, really. You know, where the tribe was a family, we were indeed a family within a family. I mean, we're speaking now after all these years, and it's like old friends where you connect. And there's so many reference points. Ash can remember my grandson in nappies, eh, Ash? And,
yeah, that's right.
It's true, you know, and you'll remember me when I was a handsome young man, and you'll be amazed how young I am, Ash. I'm still handsome.
You're still handsome. I could imagine that you'd still, you know, apart from just a couple of years.
I'm younger now than I was when you met me, you know, so, and that's what happens when when you get old and you know, you get, in fact, Danny James Zoot said, Ray, you're the oldest teenager in town, you know. And I was with Tom Hearn, and he and I are about the same age. So Ash, your heritage, you're originally from Sri Lanka, your family go back, is it?
No, so we were from the south of India. There's a state in India called Tamil Nadu, which is where my parents were from. Yeah, and so then they came here when I was really young. So, you know, I was raised up in New Zealand.
Have you ever been to where your mum and dad were? Get back to
yeah. You know, when I was younger, we'd go quite a lot. We'd go sort of every couple of years, and you know, when my grandparents were alive. And then I think, you know, now that, you know, my grandparents have all passed away, I haven't actually been in about 4 or 5 years. And part of that is just because, you know, that my immediate family is now all in New Zealand, and that family connection is gone. But the other part of it is more just a practical aspect around, you know, we've got the two young kids, and it's been too hard to kind of do a big overseas holiday. So yeah, going back is on the radar, particularly for me to show my two boys, you know, kind of a different perspective on life and kind of share that with them. But I haven't been back in about 4 or 5 years.
It's interesting. I mean, I think your two sons, when they're a bit older, they will have a need to go and see where your grandparents were, you know, their great-grandparents. And it's within us all. It's quite interesting to find out where did it all come from. And I have to say that I love India. I've been fortunate to spend a bit of time there, and not in your region where your grandparents were from, but around Mumbai, and I love the culture, the whole thing. I really, really do. And how's India doing in this? They're struggling, are they? They're getting through this COVID, you know, Ash. How's that happening?
You know, I think from all the sort of the anecdotal stuff I've heard, it's a bit of a mixed bag. You know, it sounds like they're under really strict lockdowns, but You know, I guess one of the challenges is enforcing a lockdown in a country of that size. And so I think, you know, there's, yeah, it sounds like it's a bit of a challenge, and there is a lot of cases that are popping up in India. But, you know, that's, you know, yeah, it's just a very different dynamic, you know, when you have a billion people, when you're, you know, you've got a billion people, multiple different cultures and religions and ways of life, which, you know, it's so much more diverse. And so I think, you know, policing isolation and lockdown has been a lot harder from what I hear.
I mean, logistically too, you know, I mean, New Zealand's about, what, 5 million now?
Yeah.
And easier logistically to monitor, but for, you know, a country the size of the densely populated, it's it would be quite amazing, really. But and so actually, a lot of the fans will, you know, be very keen and interested to know that after the tribe, and we've got a lot of questions. People mad at me saying, "Why did you kill off Dal? We loved Dal," and that. And I have to say that I think part of the reason was that your mum and dad had to move. They moved to England, eh? And you had to go to England, and we would have loved to have had you stay on. But and that's what behind the scenes for you listeners, you tribal brothers and sisters who follow us, and we're very touched and grateful for your interest. But I mean, fundamentally, that's what you know, Ash rightly needed to go with his parents and move to England. So you were there a couple of years, Ash, in England?
Yeah. So I was, we were there for about 2 years, and you know, it was a shame. It was difficult to, you know, I think, leave the tribe. You know, I think, as you and I discussed before, the tribe itself was a little family in its own, and, you know, it was a very full-on couple of years where, you know, we were sort of filming, but also just, you know, really building our own kind of own family ecosystem with all the other cast members. And so, you know, it was a difficult, you know, decision. But yeah, so, you know, finished that and then went to the UK for 2 years. And, you know, that was because of my father's work. And so we spent 2 years in London before moving back to New Zealand later on.
And did you ever get recognised out there, Ash?
Actually, I did. It's funny. I did get recognised there. But what I've actually realised is I've probably gotten recognised more later on in life than when I first left. And you know, there's a funny story. In 2015, I was doing my MBA and I was based in France. And I was sitting in a pub with my wife and, you know, a couple of friends. And all of a sudden, you know, the waitress that was, you know, serving us, she was from Denmark. And she just, right at the end when we were paying our bill, she just asked, were you Dal from the tribe? And it was just such a hilarious, you know, situation, because my wife, you know, she just rolled her eyes and go, "Oh God, here we go." And but it was fascinating, because, you know, obviously this lady had been watching it when she was a teenager and still, you know, recollected it. So yeah, I mean, I have been recognised, but I'm more fascinated by, you know, how long, you know, that it's lasted for.
It's very it's something that's you know, the tribe fandom within itself is like a family, Ash, you know, that, I mean, we refer to the tribal brothers and sisters and they, you know, have connected, and, I mean, they've come of age, and it's quite interesting because, I mean, part of the reason we've been doing some of these lockdown interviews, it started, Ash, to do, you know, because it's 20 years, our anniversary, and we thought it would be nice to maybe, you know, get together. I mentioned you to Ash about the vineyard. I was going to hold a reunion, a party, get everybody, cast and crew back, but then all of this came up, and we started to get a lot of messages from some very anxious people, very frightened people, and I understand that, and very, very scared, you know, and they often, you know, in formative years, linked or locked onto a character or the series, you know, all the themes that we did, and it became, I mean, almost as a, you know, a kind of a roadmap where they could chart their you know, mirroring their characters and the stories and all the themes that we had. And so you know, that's why I thought it would be a good idea to maybe do some of these interviews. And I mean, are you an anxious person, Ash? Are you, how do you cope with these kind of things?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm an anxious person. It's a really good question. I think the way I sort of deal with the scenario at the moment is, my philosophy is I just have to adapt. You know, it's the world is changing and, you know, expectations on how we interact and how we go about our lives are going to change. And, initially there was a case of, what's going to happen? And, you know, sort of speculation on, you know, what if this and what if that? And then at the end of the day, for me, it's, if I speculate too much, that's where, you sort of just get worked up about all the possibilities. And at the end of the day, you just got to get on with, accepting and moving on and figuring out how to make the situation work for you. So it's, I wouldn't necessarily say it's been anxiety, it's been an anxiety driven process. It's very much, it is what it is and we just have to move on.
That's a good outlook. It's a, my wife's very similar. It's a fatalistic. I mean, she, I have a terrible imagination, Ash. And I mean, when I'm flying, I have to fly with a parachute. I have to fly all over the world all the time. And to this day, I still have anxiety about it. And, people say, what are you frightened of flying? And I say, no, I'm frightened of crashing, flying I love, crashing it's not for me. Yeah. And I've had a couple of, I used to commute between London and New Zealand every other week. It was just crazy. And so the more you do, the more bumpy flights. And we had a terrible landing once in Wellington. And again, it's like a movie. It's like a caricature. At the end of it, everybody clapped and applauded, And that's where I was thinking, what would have happened if we crashed? Everybody would boo, And it's quite crazy. But my wife, on the other hand, is just very fatalistic and takes things as they come. And I think that's a good, I try and control my anxiety by this, I'm forgive me for repeating myself in Tribe World if you're listening to some of the other podcasts, but I love indigenous cultures, Ash, and in Native American, there's a lovely saying, fear makes the wolf bigger. So I think if you pollute your mind with speculative thoughts and what could be and what might be, that you then, it just fuels anxiety, really. Where it's good just to deal with what is, as you say, it is what it is. And you can adapt and evolve that's interesting.
No, and I think, just one thing I'd also say there is through my sort of career at the moment, one thing I've realized is there's opportunities even at the most, perilous times. And, it's interesting if I reflect on what's happening now and then also what, kind of the environment at the 2008-2009 global financial crisis, and there was a lot of fear and anxiety with people, but, there's always opportunities, and I think humans are just so, fundamentally we adapt, and this at these moments, at these periods where there's such disruption in the world, part of me is just really optimistic of the human condition to just adapt to scenarios and find new opportunities and shape new ideas and concepts. And so, I think there's an element of just optimism at the human condition.
And I agree entirely with that as well. And I totally agree. I mean, I think us species as humans, we do. I also love Gaian, G-A-I-N. I don't know if you're aware of the Gaian theories of evolution, yes, adapting. I love all that. And I do believe in that very much. I mean, I think that, and it is actually, philosophically or intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, it's heartbreaking for those around the world who are suffering loss and heartache, and heartbreaking for those economically who are hurting fiscally and people losing their jobs and worried for their mortgage. But placing that to one side, that the upside is that, this gives us a chance to reset, to perhaps pause and to rethink, and out of chaos comes opportunity. And you know, I'm looking at that in our business interests. And I know, Ash, that you're involved in commercialization now, aren't you? And that's good. That's what we need. We need people like yourselves to, I mean, for the you know, money doesn't bring happiness, but the lack of money brings unhappiness. And so for a country like New Zealand, England, wherever it is, the states all over the world, you know, we have to make sure the economy is healthy to live the way that we're living. I mean, it's quite interesting. And so, Ash, are you comfortable to speak about what you're up to these days, what you do? You went to get a lot of degrees, didn't you? And you're a bit of an enigmatic character. I was speaking with Mike Wesley, who was saying, oh, Ash is a scientist. And I was thinking, oh, wow, I had visions of you being an astronaut. Or, you know,
happy to speak to that.
The virus, no, but so, Ash, what did you take your PhD in, Maz?
So my PhD was in biomedical engineering. So it was very much, you know, designing new types of ventilators that people use in the intensive care units. And so it was, you know, it was an interesting, it was a really interesting piece of research. And it was a mix of engineering / you know, clinical trials and really testing equipment on patients. But that was really the extent of my scientific career. So I finished my PhD, and then I worked as a management consultant for about 7-8 years in Sydney, working with, you know, quite a few firms. In that period of time, I then also did my MBA. And then when I came back to New Zealand, it's when I started getting into more of the commercialization space, where really I'm involved in taking helping scientists understand what their technologies are, and then figuring out how do you get that technologies into a market, how do you create a business or a company out of that, what does a product look like, how do you build a marketing capability to support that business, how do you build a sales capability. So it's been an interesting kind of career pathway for me, where although I started as, you know, kind of a scientific pathway in my PhD, I most of my working life has been much more in the consulting, commercialization space.
Fascinating. And had you always been fascinated with engineering and science in your life?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think it's interesting. I've always been curious, and I think science for me was that sort of, it was a subject where it just forced you to continue to ask questions and continue to prod your level of inquisitiveness. And so I've always enjoyed science. And I think when I did my PhD, it really crystallized my thoughts on what science can do. I've always really been interested in that, in understanding not just the science, but, you know, how do you make science translational? There's a lot of science that's fundamental, and actually there's a lot of science that never makes it past the lab, and understanding kind of those constraints has also been sort of interest to me, which is where sort of I'm now positioned in my career.
Well, I have to say one thing. I wish I went to school with you and that I sat next to you, and I could have cribbed off your thing. I think I would have got more marks, higher marks. I could have maybe slipped something for you to do my homework or something. But I mean, wonderful. How long did it take you to do your PhD? That would have been quite a long, was that a 4 or 5 year?
I ended up doing it in 3 years. So I ended up doing my undergrad and, you know, my engineering undergrad in 4 years, and then my PhD in 3 years. Yeah. So it was quite an accelerated period of time. I just wanted to get it done.
Yeah. And then your MBA. I mean, so you've been interested in entrepreneurial, Ash, really on the business side of life. That's fascinating, and again, very important, you know. And you know, because it's it's no point in inventing something or coming up with new technology unless you can commercialize it. And it's just fascinating. Although you wouldn't have much trouble now if you're investing in stocks for any company that's doing ventilators, or maybe you would. I mean, in America, they seem to be oversupplied, aren't they? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it sounds like in the US it might be oversupplied in certain states and undersupplied in other states. And but then, you know, I think the world over there is definitely a shortage of some of these things. And it's quite, you know, it's quite nice to see innovation popping up in these moments where you see, you know, all of a sudden, not just big companies, but, you know, small companies, be it, you know, in New Zealand or, you know, wherever they are, suddenly reprioritizing making ventilators, you know, when previously they made, you know, electric motors and things like that. So, you know, that's been interesting to watch and quite fascinating, actually.
No, I love that too. I think it's interesting, really, that it's in all walks of life and whatever business. I mean, it's rather like Cloud9, really. I mean, I'm a creative being. I like to write, I do music, and that's okay. But how do you commercialize that, you know, if you want to make a living out of it? And I'm very proud that there's a small, you know, Cloud9 is an indie. It's all relative. To some people, we're a big conglomerate, but we're not. We're not a Hollywood major by any means. But, you know, to bring employment and invest capital into different countries and grow different generations of the arts. And it's the similar type of thing. And so for yourself, I mean, with your, you know, with your skills and your knowledge, Ash, as an engineer, it's wonderful that you also have that gift or that ability to then put on your kind of commercializing entrepreneurial business hat and look for ways to bring that together and work out with the universities. I guess it's very exciting that, good for you. And you're happy doing it. You love it.
Yeah, I do. I really do. And I think, you know, why I enjoy it is because, you can see, you know, with scientists, they spend their whole careers, you know, focusing on a particular application and actually seeing that translate into positive benefit for society is an incredible journey. You know, and seeing something that was, you know, developed 10 years ago, finally deployed and, you know, saving lives, whether it's a new drug or whether it's a new ventilator or whether it's a new battery, you know, it's there's something really meaningful and impactful seeing that outcome.
I was thinking about the tribe antidotes, but with them, what do you call it, with the immunization for this COVID-19, do you think they'll make vaccines? Will that? It's a long process, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, I think typically vaccines, sort of, you know, drug development can take anywhere from 7 to 10 years. And, you know, I think now there's so much investment going into trying to get a vaccine for COVID-19. Yeah. But I think, you know, also the technology, you know, some of the technologies to support drug development are so far advanced that, you know, optimistically, people talk about 2 years, you know, potentially getting a vaccine, and that, you know, that's amazing. So, you know, I guess it's a bit of watch this space to see how that pans out. But, you know, it is interesting because, you know, if I reflect on the tribe situation and what, you know, what result, you know, the virus that sort of eventually resulted in all this adult population leaving, it's beyond just the vaccine. You know, you realize that there is also just societal limitations that mean, yeah, you know, how quickly you can or can't, you know, create a vaccine. And when the tribe, you know, when I remember when I was filming the tribe, you know, when we were sort of briefed on kind of the overarching narrative of this virus killing, you know, a large chunk of population, and they're all adults, you know, at the time it was like, you know, how can a virus do that? But you look at what's happening today, and, you know, a lot of people that are really getting impacted by it are the elderly. And so, you know, the need to get a virus, but also to get the public healthcare systems working for this community of people is absolutely critical. But it, you know, I think, right, it is, the tribe was really, it was really a visionary show at the time, and interesting to see, you know, how the situation in the world today is, you know, has elements of truth from that show.
Yeah, you know, actually, it's interesting in the, and again, a lot of the you know, the passionate fans who've been there since the beginning always thought that maybe took a year or two to come together. It actually took, God, about 15 years, because nobody thought it was a real premise. They thought that's crazy. That would never happen. And it's, but I mean, it's, you know, I'm fascinated, as you are, with different, sociologically, I'm very fascinated with, you know, the kind of social anthropology, really. And it, as you say, the breakdown of society, it's not just the virus that can be contained, but, I mean, what will it do to the health service? What will it do to the economy? What will it do to our social fabric? To education, the way we live our life, with, you know, with borders, travel, all of this. And it's just, I mean, who would have ever believed, Ash, at the beginning of the year, when we're celebrating 2020 and thinking, oh, wow, we're in the, now the roaring 20s again, you know, who would have ever thought that we, the world, has experienced what we've experienced in the past few months?
That's right.
I mean, maybe it's 20 years, 30 years ago, when I was trying to do the tripartite, oh, that would never happen. It's implausible, but it's quite frightening, really. And but also it's exciting because, as you say, it gives a chance to adapt, to change, to look for something better. And I was saying today to my youngest son, where he said, oh, I can't wait to get back to normal. And I'm saying, no, I don't want normal. Normal didn't work. I don't want to go through this again, you know. And it's... you know, it's all the plans for this year. It's, you know, you think, oh, my diary is thrown out. Everybody, it's just, it's quite amazing that, but it's nice to have your outlook so optimistic, Ash. And I'm the same. I believe very much in the human condition and the species and our innovation. It's very, very inspiring, really. And now, Ash, I've got a lot of questions, so I'm going to go on to our Facebook page, and as you were mentioning before I get into that, you like cooking. Is that like a hobby? Do you do it regularly? Is it an escape?
I find it very therapeutic. You know, I probably once a week try and do a you know, like a full on proper recipe. But I think it's just, you know, I sort of now view the kitchen as my canvas where I can just experiment and try new things and sort of zone out and, you know, just enjoy the smells of the ingredients. And yeah, it's funny. It's just a very relaxing endeavor for me.
And what's your favorite dish? What do you like to make?
Well, I don't really have a favorite dish, but I've discovered Ottolenghi's simple recipe book. And I love the book because it has some really gorgeous meals, but very easy and very simple to make. You know, minimal ingredients. It's just a lovely book. So I'm just slowly chipping away at trying to do, you know, a recipe a week from that book.
Well, isn't that nice? It's another question I'm always very intrigued with. That if you close your eyes, and if I said, okay, Ash, what's your favorite dish your mum made? What would it be?
There's these South Indian dish called idlis, which are kind of like rice based patties. And so my mum used to make these, and you know, she still does actually. So you know, she makes these idlis, and then there's this sauce called sambar on it, which I love. And so I would, you know, I could eat that, you know, forever and ever. Obviously lathered with a lot of ghee.
Did that come from your grandmother or
no? It's a very traditional South Indian meal, and so you know in southern parts of India it's very common.
Yeah, that's lovely, because it's always fascinating. My mother in post-war Britain, you know the economy again, everybody was poor and so rebuilding and. So in post-war Britain, I grew up with a thing called stovies, and that's like potatoes and onion and gravy, very simple dish. And I love it and I miss it. And I have it all the time. And my poor wife is always, after we've been married 50 years, and she cannot make the same stovies as my old mum, you know.
A lot of expectation.
Yeah, expectations. It's amazing. So now I'm always fascinated. That's interesting that. So I've got some, so this is from Gemma Wood. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Gemma. Thank you for your question. Hi, Ash and Ray. Ash, you were a great character in the tribe. I liked how Dal had his own dreams and caring way of thinking. In Series 1, you were really funny with Jack. Would you have preferred to stay and help Jack in Series 2, or did you prefer to stay at the farm? If you went back and had to do it again, would you like for your character to have taken a different path? So, your dream, the character's dreams, actually, Ash, was to go into the country, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, that's right. And it's an interesting question, because I think, Series 1, the relationship that Dal and Jack had just was so unique. And I think, would I go back and change it? Because in Series 2, we sort of moved into the farm. Would I go back and change it? I don't think so, because I think, Dal needed, he needed to discover his own kind of identity. I think, part of Season 1 revolved around Jack and Dal, and they were kind of so tight-knit, and so there was a process of discovery that he needed to go to. But in saying that, I think, the dynamic that, Jack and Dal had was just fantastic, and it was such an awesome relationship to have.
Very popular, actually, with the fans. As I was saying to Mike when we had our thing, and he said he considers you a great mate still, and you guys got on very well, and that's nice. Now I've got one from Samuel Owuzu. Good morning. Good morning. I'm locked into times here because it's actually the evening for us, isn't it? But in the UK, it's the daytime. So Ash, the question is, as a 10-year-old discovering the tribe, Dal was my favorite character. What was one of your favorite storylines to do with Dal? And if you could play another tribe character, who would that have been?
I think, I was quite young when I filmed the tribe. I'll answer the second question first. So if I chose another character, I think I'd actually probably enjoy playing Jack. And part of it is because, both Jack and Dal, there was a sense of innocence and naivety about the world. And it was really, as a young person, it was easy to play those roles because, I as an individual was also quite young and naive about the world. And so I felt like at that stage in life, it was a nice role to play. It was a nice sort of set of characters to play. So Jack would have been a character I'd love to play. I think in terms of the storylines, that I think the Season 1 development of Dal was actually so critical because it, for me, I enjoyed that story, the sort of the Season 1 storylines where it was really just establishing who I was as an individual. I'd had this relationship with Amber. She was basically who I looked up to. And then all of a sudden, you're in the mall environment and you've got all of these other, relationships that you suddenly, you had no idea that you need to build. And so for me, that Season 1 was just awesome because the whole storyline was about a process of discovery, a process of new relationships, a process of building trust. And, I just think that was a fantastic storyline for Dal at the time.
Very good. Well done. That's a good insight there, Ash. I got one from Jessica Jackson. Hello, Jessica. Did you have to learn how to roller skate for the show, Ash?
That's a really good question. Actually, I didn't. So, I don't tell this to many people, but when I was younger, we were in Auckland for a few years and I got into rollerblading. And, I remember my mum would, drive me to the other side of the city where there was a rollerblading club. And, we'd go there and I'd do all these kind of like tricks and stuff within the gym. So, I would have loved to say I did learn it for the tribe, but I actually knew a bit of rollerblading beforehand.
Well, that's good. Segueing in, it's an interesting question from Todd Toddington. From Todd, did you ever fall over on your rollerblades in Season 1? Did you ever fall in the filming, Ash? Did you ever get it wrong? When you're asked to, you've got to hit different marks, or a lot of the filming process is such where you know, it's not easy. You do a few takes and yeah, so.
I probably did, but you know, I think you know, the thing that stands out is when I look, you know, someone pointed a YouTube video of season one and it was me, you know, rollerblading and actually I do not look like a natural. So, you know, you look at me rollerblading and it was just, it wasn't a natural skill for me. So definitely I would have fallen over, you know, multiple times before, you know, even remotely getting up.
I've got one from Anastasia Snooker. Hello, Anastasia. Dal's death scene was very emotional for me. My question is, did you think it was a fitting end for your character? And how was it actually asked to play your own death scene at such a young age? That would have been, I mean, it was very emotional for the fans watching it. How did you feel?
You know, I think there was a certain level of emotion on two lenses. So one is, you know, obviously when Dal passed away, that was quite a confronting scene because, you know, the way that film was, you know, the way that scene was, you know, panned out, it was really with Amber and, you know, it was a very concrete ending to the character. And so, you know, it was quite confrontational. And I think it was also confrontational in terms of the mechanism of how that happened, you know, being pushed off a building, you know, effectively executed is, you know, quite a confronting storyline and very powerful. I think that the deeper layer for me was that it was quite an honor in the sense of having, you know, a time on screen to do that scene. And for me, it was also just a reflection that my period with my colleagues and my friends was over because of my family moving overseas. And so, you know, on two lenses, it was a challenging environment, a challenging scene to play for two reasons.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've got one from Ney DeMar Perez Riviera. What is your favorite memory from the show, apart from making good friends? Sending love from Puerto Rico, stay safe. So have you got a favorite memory, Ash? Or anything?
I reckon the moments that really stick out for me are in between scenes when we'd go into the green room. And, you know, I remember a few times where me and Michael would have these heavy scenes and we'd just, you know, we'd have to do reshoot after reshoot and we'd finally get it right. And then, you know, we'd basically go to the green room and at the green room they had a cricket bat and a, you know, a tennis ball. And so we'd then grab the bat and ball, shoot to the corridor and just try and squeeze in a game of corridor cricket, you know, for 10 or 15 minutes. And, you know, for those of you who don't know cricket's just a sport, you know, where you have, you know, a batsman and a bowler. And it was those kind of small memories of, you know, the times off the set, you know, during our breaks where we did stuff what, you know, we did things what other kids would do. And you know, those memories really stood out for me.
That was your formative years as well, wasn't it really, Ash? I mean, and, you know, because you would have been, how old were you when you, in season one, you would have been, what, 10 or?
I think I was 12. Yeah. I was sort of, second half of my form two year group. So 12, and then I think I sort of did try from 12 to about 14, close to 15.
Yes, but, I mean, did you, had you always wanted to, were you involved in the arts as a child? How did that come about, Ash? How did you,
It was interesting. I mean, I've always been involved in the arts, but in either musicals or theatre. And the opportunity for the Tribe came about. So I was, just before the Tribe had started, they had a run of Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat in Wellington. And so I was part of the choir, but I had a very small piece where I did, you know, I had to walk across the stage. And I think that had triggered someone from the audience who ended up being my agent to ask and talk through, you know, would I be interested in going down this pathway? And I think that then led to the Tribe. So I've always been interested in the arts. And I think, you know, even after my period of the Tribe ended,
even throughout my university years and high school years, I was always involved in musicals and theatre, and you know, I think it's just an inherent part of who I am, and it was just an outlet for me to try a new persona or try, you know, be a different person.
Nice. And anybody else in the family artistic like that, Ash?
You know, it was funny. I found out a few years after the tribe that actually my granddad, who my mum's father, was part of a theatre group when he was, you know, a young lad, and I'd never known about that, and it's fascinating. I think, yeah, it only came out, you know, sort of when I was doing the tribe actually, and so yeah, he was involved in the theatre and arts. My sister, you know, she does a lot of sort of painting and things like that. But yeah, that's really the extent of the artistic side of my immediate family.
Yeah, so it's maybe something in the DNA, you never know. It's interesting that I've got another question here, Ash, from Jeffrey Crowell. Yep. Hi, Jeffrey. Hi, Ash. What do you think about how Dal was so much more mature in his personality and demeanor compared to many of the other characters in the tribe? Dal was younger, yet possessed much higher level of maturity than many of his older counterparts. He was wiser and more level-headed. He didn't get himself involved in the somewhat petty drama of some of the characters bickering. Dal thought that many of the personal calls that he sent me were actually a bit ridiculous. So he seemed to be quite a mature man, a young man. He seemed quite level-headed, and partly that's the writing, but you brought that dimension, Ash, and you played him very well with a nice quirky humor, but also a sincerity and a rational, very well balanced outlook, really, where, I mean, Jack was a bit more histrionic and a bit more, but Ash seemed to be like a leveler, you know. Did you feel that, or sorry?
That's a really interesting and good question. I think there's a couple of elements to it. You know, I think one is there's a level-headedness, and, you know, that definitely is, you know, that was a really interesting character trait, and I do associate a level-headedness with maturity. And so, yes, on one extent, I think, you know, it was fascinating to see him a lot more level-headed than other characters. I think the other side, though, the flip side is part of, you know, part of his character where he didn't get involved in the petty debacles. You know, my take on that is there's an element of naivety or lack of life experience that he had. You know, and if I reflect on, you know, even just myself as both a kid and then going through the teenage years, the difference in personality is you know, a lot more. It's very, you know, it's very black and white. You know, as a young child, you to a certain extent don't get involved in some of those petty things because you just don't know any better. You're still absorbing, trying to understand what are social norms and how do people interact, and, you know, and all of these things. And it's only when you get later in life, you know, particularly in the teenage years, where, you know, you've got your own vested interests, or you know what your own agenda is. And those are the things that lead to, you know, an individual being petty or getting into arguments, or, you know, and so I think, I don't necessarily think it was maturity. I think it was Dal was so young. He was just absorbing everything in the world, and, you know, he was balanced, but he also didn't, you know, to a certain extent, probably wouldn't have understood some of the more intricate nuances in particular relationships, or understand some of the complications in how society functions. So I think, yeah, it's a mix of maturity by being level-headed, but I also think there was an element of lack of experience that maybe made him have these traits that were perceived as mature.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting take. I think that's fascinating. And actually got one from Amesley Noodle from Instagram. Amesley Noodle, I'm curious to know if Ashworth is more of a city fella or like his character with a yearning to be out in the country. Do you like, are you a country boy or do you like the city, Ash?
I do really enjoy the cities. There's two, you know, I think there's, I sort of flip-flop between the two. I really enjoy the cities for the vibrancies, for the dynamism, for the diversity that a city has. I think for me personally, the yearning for the countryside is the solidarity and the isolation that you can get. It gives you time to reflect. And I think, you know, it's interesting to see Dale. You know, I think to a certain extent he was like that. You know, his time at the farm, you know, for him it was just about connecting with the land and really just, you know, stepping back away from all the hustle bustle of what was going on with, you know, with the mall. And, you know, yeah, I'm a bit like that. You know, I have times where I prefer the city. I have times where I prefer isolation and living in the countryside and you know, not being surrounded by people and communities and groups.
Well, that's lovely. That's interesting. That now we've got one from Tiernan, Tiernan Plant. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, Tiernan, but what are your thoughts on ketchup?
Yeah, I'm actually more of a tomato sauce man myself. I love ketchup. But I think I like tomato sauce more.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was mentioning before we recorded that that's become a bit of a meme there, the man that's ketchup, you know, that, and it's quite fascinating that from Harold Bender from Israel, are you still friends with Jack? You guys keep in touch occasionally, do you, Ash?
Yeah, well, I haven't caught up with Mike in a long time. But I, you know, occasionally I do message him. I haven't actually seen him in ages. And I think, you know, maybe the last time I saw him was about 8-9 years ago. And that was, I think, because he, you know, I can't remember whether he was in the UK for a bit.
Over to England.
Yeah. And so he was in the UK. I was in Australia. And then, you know, I think he came back to New Zealand and I was overseas. And, but yeah, I do occasionally message him, and I you know, I think out of all the, you know, out of all the actors in the show, I think, you know, because Michael and I spent so much time together on set, we ended up just naturally gravitating to each other, and so, you know, I do keep in touch and keep tabs on what he does, and so, you know, it has been a while since I've actually seen him in person though.
Oh, it'd be nice to. We must get that kind of reunion happening. That would be fun, I think.
You know, for everybody, it would be excellent.
Yeah, but it's like a family. I mean, everybody will know you can. You know, you can not see somebody for a few, and then just pick up and like it was yesterday, really. That so I've got one here from Alex Lynch. Dal often talked about wanting to own land and run a farm. But he stayed with the Morris because he didn't want to leave ever and went between the farm and the mall. Actually, we've probably answered that. If Dal had lived, do you think he would have continued with the mall rats or eventually leave to pursue his dream? I mean, that's, again, I mean, it's a bit difficult, really, Alex, because the writers would take it one way. But, I mean, placing that to one side, you personally, what would you have you liked to have seen for the character? To stay with the mall rats, or do you think to leave to pursue the dream, Ash?
I think staying with the mall rats probably was where I would have envisioned them. I think ultimately, you know, the mall rats were his family, and so, you know, I could have imagined a scenario where Dal would have gone to pursue his dream. And then actually realize that the people that he needs around him were back at the mall. And so, you know, he probably would have had to go to try and pursue the dream, but, you know, I could have envisioned him coming back.
Oh, that's interesting. I've got one, again, this is on our YouTube channel. Now, I don't even like chai lattes, so that's an interesting name. So, hi, what's an acting tip? Or just general advice you wished you had been given before taking on the role? Or I suppose if you yourself could go back and give a young Ashworth some advice, what would you now say? Hope that made sense. Thanks. That's an interesting question.
That is a really good question. I think, you know, if I went back, for me, the biggest thing, you know, I remember we'd film, you know, we'd film And I'd always be very uncomfortable watching myself on film. And part, you know, a lot of that was because, you know, you pick up on all the flaws and you'd be embarrassed about, you know, seeing yourself there, and, you know, it's not quite how you felt like you were acting. And in reflection, I think the advice that I'd give is, it's okay. You know, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. It's okay not to like your work, and it's okay to, you know, it's okay not to, you know, feel like to reflect on something and feel like you haven't, you know, it's not exactly what you thought, but you need to do that, because to improve in anything, you need to reflect on your own work. And so, you know, I think when I was younger, you know, I'd always avoid trying to watch, you know, the full end-to-end episode in front of anybody else. But I, you know, I think in hindsight, you know, if I could go back, I definitely would. I definitely encourage, you know, anyone to not be embarrassed by their work, but, you know, show their work in front of others and welcome any external feedback, but also, you know, make sure that you can learn from that process as well.
Yeah, I think that's good advice, Ash. I agree with that. And it is, it's, you know, so we get so many emails and questions all the time from people who want to come into the industry. And I'm always saying, look, if you're creative, you have that need, you've got to chase your dream and, you know, be happy. And, you know, Mikey, we've been talking about Mike. Mike was a lawyer and probably wasn't happy doing that and did something else. But, I mean, I've never thought, Ash, that I've ever worked a day in my life. And I've been very blessed and very lucky to do what I love doing, you know, and I would do it for, you know, as long as I could make a living, even if it was nothing, you know, $50 a week. You know, I guess my wife and kids wouldn't be too happy with that. But I mean, I need to do it. I love doing it. I still do it. I would never retire. And you strike me, Ash, that you're in a good space. You're involved. You've had your intellectual, your education, and you're now within the innovation and commercializing, which is, I think, great job. You obviously get a lot of job satisfaction on that. And it's very positive and very optimistic, isn't it, really? It's very exciting.
Yeah, and I think reiterating what you said, you know, in relation to that previous question, you know, it is so important to find something that you enjoy and just take a punt. You know, there's often so many reasons to not do something. And, you know, sometimes your rational brain can basically just discount everything and go, no, you shouldn't do this because X, Y, and Z. But without trying anything, you won't know. And really, you know, I think, Ray, as your comment before, you know, when you feel like you're not working, that's the best, you know, that's one of the best situations you can be in, because your heart is fully aligned to what you want to do. And whether or not you want to be an actor, you know, I think if you want to be an actor, you just got to take a punt and do it. And because otherwise you'll just regret not doing it.
That's right. That's right. No, I agree. It's very, very important. And as we come up to our 20th anniversary, in kind of, because our hours pass so quickly, I could speak with you all night, but I don't want to keep you too late, because you're a few hours ahead of me. So I know you'll have work tomorrow and you've got your children. So I don't want to be monopolizing too much of your time. But just as we come up to closing off, Ash, is there anything you'd like to say to the fans in the 20th anniversary?
No, I mean, I think probably the main thing is, you know, a couple of things. I think firstly, I am actually genuinely taken back by how there are still people enjoying that show. And you know, it really was an honor to be part of that show and have an impact and have, you know, whether it's influence or whether it's some sort of direction for people to watching, you know, watching the show, you know, that for me personally is just so empowering. And it's a really big honor. I think, you know, that the second thing is really that 20 years is, you know, it's a long time, but it's also a short time. You know, in 20 years, the world's different, you know, very technology's evolved and, you know, we've got, countries that are, you know, now superpowers that were not 20 years ago. And yet in 20 years, the themes that the show had and you know, some of the things that are going on in our society, they're all still valid. And I think, you know, it really is a reflection that the show was, it was so underpinned by kind of common themes that we have in society that there's going to be, you know, lessons that people can take away, regardless of whether you watch it 20 or 30 years down the track, because it is an apt description of how society behaves, whether you're kids or whether you're adults. And, you know, I'm just impressed that, you know, the writers and yourself, you know, you were able to encapsulate that vision back then, and it stood the test of time.
Well, yeah, that means a lot. And I have to say that it's a great honour that you were part of that journey, Ash. And I know that I speak on behalf of all the tribal brothers and sisters around the world that, you know, Dal is a loved, well-loved and a character that, you know, really touched a lot of people. And it's very humbling, as you rightly say, Ash, you know, to know that, you know, for all of us, or for all of our tribe, our tribal family, our cast crew, all the team, you know, that it's still resonating as it is today. And we appreciate that very much. And Ash, I know I speak on behalf of all of the people within our tribe fandom to thank you for taking the time out of your clearly very busy life to give something back and to speak. And I think all the fans will be absolutely fascinated to know, you know, what you're up to, and will really very much want to wish you all the very best with your lovely family, your wife and your two sons, and the important work that you're doing. So, you know, on behalf of them, thank you very, very much for taking that time. And for me, Ash, it's a joy. You know, I remember casting you and looking at you every day in the rushes, and I thought you brought a lovely quality to your character and a nice gentleness as well. But you know, that's captured forever. Your two sons, they're going to watch that in the future years, and for posterity, it's lovely. And your grandchildren, I mean, it's there forever, really. And I think that it'll be very interesting. I wonder what kind of world. In fact, I remember the lines so well in all of the seasons, and there was one in season one, I think around about episode 4 or 5, where Bray is saying towards the end, "What kind of world are you planning?" You know, and I wonder what kind of world, when your sons are your age, as you are now, and that's what it is, as I am now, Ash, so you will be. You know, as you are now, so once was I, and as I am now, so you will be. When you're a grandfather, I wonder what it will be like, you know. And again, yeah, without giving any spoilers away, some of the books, and, you know, we can't go into too much of that, Ash, but, you know, we deal with some very interesting things, and it is so, yeah, a lot of the stuff in the tribe is, you know, we did a lot of virtual reality and paradise and technology and the responsibilities through the Technos tribe and all these things, and the themes of farming and sustainability and the environment and our Mother Earth and the planet and Tyson's kind of philosophies. It's a composite, a wonderful theme of, you know, where we're at. But Ash, it's you know, we'll have to get you over to the vineyard and have a glass of wine. And do you like a wine? Do you enjoy wine?
Oh, I do. Particularly in the last few years, I've enjoyed it.
No, I love it too. And so we have a nice Pinot Noir. So we'll do that. But lots of love to you and to your family. And you, thank you again for the time.
Thank you for reaching out. It was actually really, I mean, you know, it was nice to connect with you as well. And I think when all this settles down, you know, I will try and make a trip up to the vineyard and say hello. And, you know, I think particularly because Toby and Saran were just such a key part of our lives back then. And, you know, I think, you know, they were pretty much our pseudo parents.
it'll be nice to see them. They're the listeners listening, that that was your house parents, really. And so, you know, because we've had cast houses and chaperones, and so it's a family within a family, a tribe within a tribe. Well, you take care, Ash, and stay safe, and keep innovating, and keep commercializing, and look after your two little boys and your lovely wife, and on behalf of all in our tribal fandom, we wish you and your family all our very best and much love to you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Nice to speak. Bye-bye now.
Bye.